Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 919. The Truppenkampfverbande Part 2, German Ostpolitik Part 2. This is being recorded on August 25th of the year 2016. We're going to proceed with analysis of aspects of what I call the Truppenkampfverbande. That's actually a term I made up. It's Truppenkampfverbande. Truppen, of course, refers to Donald Trump, the GOP presidential nominee. And Kampfverbande is a designation for German infantry units and or military units, Wehrmacht units. And that basically, in my considered professional opinion, is what Trump basically is. We are seeing a media, well, cesspool comes to mind. That's really not the best term. It's apt, but the performance of our media now is almost even beyond propagandistic. It's almost more like a sidewalk barker trying to lure people in to a burlesque show, a strip show. I wouldn't even dignify what our media are doing at this point as being like a carnival sideshow barker ushering people in to look at the freaks. It's nothing anywhere near that dignified and does not possess that degree of decorum. The degree of lying, and beyond that, just the degree of superficial or even superficial adolescent or even childish mentation about what is going on in the world is increasingly remarkable. I was expecting when I began many decades ago to examine the circumstances behind and underlying President Kennedy's assassination. That was how I got started with this in the early 1970s. I came to the conclusion that by the time these political forces had become manifest to a large extent, and by the time the process underway had reached fruition, the U.S. would be fascist. However, I did not envision how really ludicrous our society has become in so many ways. It's not really amusing. It reminds me of the Nietzschean statement, that's Friedrich Nietzsche, the German philosopher, when he observed that, quote, "a joke is the epigram on the death of a feeling." And that is what we are seeing now. We have been seeing Donald Trump, who basically is not only a fascist, but whose connections go to the far right, people like David Duke, other white supremacists or Nazis, or what are euphemized these days as alt-right. His heritage is German. His connections go in the direction of the far right, the underground Reich, and the Axis itself prior to and after World War II. Prior to, during, and after World War II, his connections do not go in the direction of Russia / the Kremlin / the Soviet Union / Putin. He has had some relatively conciliatory remarks to make about Putin and Ukraine. He also had a campaign manager, Paul Manafort, M-A-N-A-F-O-R-T, who had served as an advisor to the ill-fated Viktor Yanukovych. He was one of a revolving door of presidents of Ukraine. This one, Yanukovych, was backed by Russia / Putin. He was overthrown in late 2013 and early 2014 in the Maidan coup, which was a very obvious covert operation in which the West, chiefly the U.S. and Germany, backed the heirs to the OUNB, that is the Ukrainian fascist organization that was allied with Nazi Germany in the pre-World War II and the World War II periods, and in the post-World War II period, it became a fundamental element of the underground Reich, the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, originally called the Committee of Captive Nations, when it was formed by Adolf Hitler in 1943, when it became a key element of the former World Anti-Communist League, and in addition to working with CIA and the Galen Organization and later the BND, when the Galen Org became the official intelligence service of the Federal Republic of Germany, the ABN basically became a key element of the Republican Party. And it certainly superficially might appear to the unknowing that Trump was basically running interference for Russia and that Manafort's position in Ukraine had something to do with it. In fact, I think what we are looking at, and we're going to develop Donald Trump's connections later on in this program and in next week's program, what we are looking at with Trump's relatively benign statements about Putin and Russia and Ukraine is a manifestation of traditional German Ostpolitik. We're going to begin by taking, before we review what we looked at last week, let's take a quick look at Paul Manafort. Now, when he was an advisor to Yanukovych, he had some very strong financial links with people within the Yanukovych regime, and this has led the media to say, you see, he was a Putin-slash-Russian dupe-slash-puppet. There are a couple of things to remember. The Yanukovych regime, like a whole series, in fact, all of the governments that Ukraine has had, including the current government, was very, very corrupt. There was a tremendous amount of graft and crony capitalism and concentration of economic power. The fellow who presided over Yanukovych's relatively brief tenure presiding over this social and economic and political cesspool, the finance minister was none other than Petro Poroshenko, who is the current president of Ukraine. Poroshenko is the obvious beneficiary of the very obvious coup-slash-covert operation called the Maidan coup, and he enjoys the unqualified support of the West, including and especially the U.S., by the same turn of logic or same twisted logic that Manafort worked for Yanukovych, therefore, and Manafort also worked for Trump, therefore Trump must work for the Russians. The fact that Petro Poroshenko worked for Yanukovych and the West, including and especially the U.S., works with him, must mean that the West, including and especially the U.S., is a Kremlin-slash-Russian-slash-Putin-dupe-slash-agent, what have you. Well, obviously, that is more than a little ridiculous. When we take a close look at Paul Manafort's activities, He was part and parcel to the Reagan administration, then went to work as a political consultant, and in that regard was, in all probability, functioning as a cat's paw for elements of U.S. intelligence. Reading now from the New York Times, that led everybody to suspect that, Manafort was working for Yanukovych, therefore he was working for Putin, therefore Trump is working for Putin, blah, 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 which in combination with the now quite obviously not Russian high-profile hacks of the Democratic National Committee, the now the NSA, led people to say, yep, it must be Putin. Yep, it's Putin, it's Russia. If there were a hailstorm in Florida in the middle of the summer, it would be blamed on Putin at this stage of the game. Reading from the, one hesitates to call it seminal, but the New York Times article that really got the ball rolling about Manafort and led to his resignation as Trump's campaign manager, and replaced him by the former chief of Breitbart, whose politics fall to the right of Ivan the Terrible, and who quite obviously is something of a mainstreaming element for the far right and fascist and white supremacist elements. Reading from the New York Times of August 14th of 2016, this is an article, Secret Ledger in Ukraine lists cash for Donald Trump's campaign chief. This is by Andrew E. Kramer, K-R-A-M-E-R, Mike McIntyre, M-C, capital I-N-T-I-R-E, and Barry Meyer, capital M-E-I-E-R. And in between all of the bloviation about, again, Yanukovych, Russia, Manafort, we find this. And although I'm not going to read from it, simply check Manafort's Wikipedia page. He also served as consultants to Jonas Savimbi, the ultra-right wing and U.S. intelligence-affiliated guerrilla fighting, whose organization was fighting in Angola, and also his, so that is to say, Manafort's association with Mobutu Sese Seko as well. Manafort's affiliations do not go to Russia slash Putin slash the Kremlin. Rather, they go to the far right. And nothing, I think, exemplifies Manafort's position better than this. Reading again from that New York Times story of August 14th of 2016, skipping down. The developments in Ukraine underscore the risky nature of the international consulting that had been a staple of Mr. Manafort's business since the 1980s, when he went to work for the Philippine dictator Ferdinand Marcos. Before joining Mr. Trump's campaign this spring, Mr. Manafort's most prominent recent client was Mr. Yanukovych, who, like Ferdinand Marcos, was deposed in a popular uprising, unquote. Several things to note, as we have discussed in numerous For the Record shows dealing with the seminal book, the fundamental and very important book, Gold Warriors by Sterling and Peggy Seagrave. Ferdinand Marcos was working with the Japanese in order to access some of the unbelievable wealth, particularly gold, that was stashed in various underground mines and repositories by the Japanese. This was loot that was co-opted under the Golden Lily program. After the war, Japanese General Yamashita's driver was captured and tortured. One of the seminal people involved in that torture was General Edward Lansdale. From the end of World War II onward, the Golden Lily loot, the Black Eagle Trust, and other key elements of Axis loot were utilized by Western intelligence in order to finance various types of coups, including the replacement of governments. Marcos initially worked with the Japanese and with the U.S. However, he was not sufficiently cooperative with the Rainbow Dollars program. That was a Reagan administration program to get a hold of as much of the Golden Lily gold as possible in order to back the dollar with gold. When Marcos refused to play ball, William Casey, the head of the CIA, initiated a covert operation which culminated in the so-called People Power Revolution of 1986. In the 1986 People Power Revolution, very similar to the Maidan and some of the so-called color revolutions, it was a covert operation, but rather than infiltrating the military and setting up a pretext by which the military would overthrow the government, this involved the mobilization of the civilian population behind a pre-selected front person, basically, for the power interests behind the coup itself. The People Power Revolution brought to power Corazon Aquino. Now, she was the widow of Benigno Aquino, a long-standing CIA officer who worked for not only the CIA, but specifically for his mentor, the aforementioned Edward Lansdale, deeply involved with the Golden Lily Project, the utilization of the Golden Lily loot for covert operations. Again, Lansdale covered it great length in the various programs talking about gold warriors. Benigno Aquino came back to the Philippines in 1983 and was then assassinated by Ferdinand Marcos in a very obvious hit. In all probability, Benigno Aquino, Aquino was the cat's paw for the CIA. Marcos, in all probability, knew this, killed Aquino, and then, in so doing, ultimately set the stage for his own replacement in a subsequent coup. Now, Benigno Aquino, again, was a long-standing CIA agent, protege of Edward Lansdale, worked for Lansdale both in the Philippines and in Vietnam. And Corazon Aquino's vice president was worth noting, a guy named Salvador Laurel, last name L-A-U-R-E-L. Salvador Laurel was the son of Jose Laurel, who was the nominal head of state for the Japanese occupation government in the Philippines during World War II, and thereby inevitably was deeply involved with the original internment of the vast amount of Golden Lily wealth. In a way, not unlike the Maidan coup, which saw the heirs to the OUNB World War II-era fascists installed in power, the People Power Revolution saw the widow of a long-standing CIA officer affiliated with the recovery of the Golden Lily loot, that again, Edward Lansdale, and her vice president was the son of the Japanese occupation government head who had presided over, or undoubtedly cooperated with the Japanese in the Golden Lily Project. That again, Jose Laurel. So again, when we look at Paul Manafort, far from being a Russian / Kremlin / Putin dupe, he would appear to be a covert operator whose consulting positions are designed to manipulate people in foreign countries for one purpose or another, ultimately to the financial enrichment and geopolitical enhancement of forces in the West. There is, by the way, a cardinal rule for a good double agent. One should remember this in connection with the Paul Manafort, Viktor Yanukovych relationship. A good double agent should, quote, make himself or herself indispensable to the effort, unquote. And if you take a look at Manafort in Ukraine under Yanukovych, I suspect that he was helping to pave the way for Yanukovych's ouster, just as he was apparently helping to pave the way for Ferdinand Marcos's ouster in the so-called People Power Revolution.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
Now, reviewing information that we looked at in For the Record 918, we took a look at traditional German Ostpolitik, which for hundreds of years has sought to maintain, at the very least, a non-hostile relationship between Germany, or even before Germany was fully unified, Prussia and Russia, and even the Soviet Union. We took a look, in particular, at how some dynamics, which we are seeing today, had played out in the early Cold War period. We took a look at an open letter to Stalin that was published in 1949 in the Burger Zeitung, that's B-U-E-R-G-E-R, arguably the most important German language paper in the U.S. It was the de facto outlet for the Steuben Society. That is an organization that was a top pan-German organization in the U.S. It was part of the Nazi Fifth Column in the U.S. prior to World War II, as we saw from the book Undercover by John Roy Carlson. And in addition to the Carlson text, we also read from T.H. Petten's The New Germany and the Old Nazis. The Steuben Society also functioned as part of the post-World War II underground Reich component in the U.S. And again, in 1949, they published an open letter to Stalin, and that in turn was written by Dr. Bruno Fricke, and he was a close associate of Otto Strasser, one of the Strasser brothers, who, along with his brother Gregor, had been a key element of the SA, the Brown Shirts in Germany. When the SS liquidated Ernst Röhm and other SA leaders, including Gregor Strasser, Otto Strasser fled to Czechoslovakia, where he began working for Hitler, against Hitler, I should say, but for something very much approximating a third position manifestation of fascism, albeit a Hitlerless version of fascism. The fact that the Burger Zeitung, an outlet for the Steuben Society, would signal something so dramatic is more than a little important. As we saw, this paper was very, very close to the right wing and Joe McCarthy. In the early 50s, it was Joe McCarthy's longtime chief legal counsel, Roy Cohn, who for many years was the attorney for Donald Trump. Then on March 10th, 1952, there was a response to that signal, open letter to Stalin in the Burger Zeitung of the Steuben Society, and that was the Soviet note of March 10th, 1952. Reading from a text we used last week, the Germany Plots with the Kremlin, by P.H. Tetens, that along with the New Germany and the Old Nazis, and also Roy Carlson's Undercover, are available for download for free in the books section of SpitfireList.com. In the pro-Adenauer press, this, by the way, is from a book published in 1953, in the pro-Adenauer press, including the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, Christ und Welt, the Deutsche Zeitung of Stuttgart, editorials have been written assuring the Russians that Dr. Adenauer's policy aims to create the security necessary for both the Germans and the Russians, and that this can only be brought about after Germany had become a third power factor which could employ its influence in such a way as to deter the U.S., quote, from starting a preventive war, unquote. I would add the U.S. stance vis-a-vis Ukraine and Russia right now is alarming a great many people, including and especially people in Europe and Germany, about the possibility that they may be at ground zero of another war. Continuing, thus, While in the short run, the Bonn government aims to create a united Europe, which of course has happened, it hopes ultimately to reach a solid understanding with the Soviets at the expense of the U.S. And in addition to affecting a united Europe, the Europa Germanica that was envisioned by people incorporating German Ostpolitik was also aimed at creating a German-dominated all-European army and ultimately to lead the whole of Western Europe away from NATO, whose military role would be filled by that all-European German-dominated army. Once again, from the Germany plots with the Kremlin, the German Chancellor's plan is that the USA is now so deeply committed to her European defense pledge that she will readily sacrifice billions, dozens of billions of dollars in the strengthening and the rearming of a German-dominated Europe. After this is accomplished, Dr. Adenauer's grandiose concept envisions negotiations with Russia with the prospect of getting substantial territorial concessions from the Kremlin in Eastern Europe, for which Germany in return will break away with the whole of Western Europe from the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. So when we see Trump talking down NATO, that is consistent with German Ostpolitik. More from the Germany plots with the Kremlin. The reaction of the German strategists to the Soviet note of March 10, 1952, however, exposes their true designs. German geopolitical journals speak of it as, quote, the highest trump card in the hands of the Chancellor, unquote, which will enable him to mow down the resistance of France against Germany's concept of a unified Europe. The pro-Adenauer press interpreted the Russian note as a tremendous asset in speeding up the timetable for the creation of a European army under German domination. And again, the idea of a united Europe, of Germany becoming a third power in the world, and ultimately uniting Europe, Western Europe in particular, under its stewardship, and creating a German-dominated all-European military force and leading Western Europe away from NATO are things that are developing, yea, verily, as we speak.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal, specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
Another of the things that I noted last week was that one of Donald Trump's top national security advisors is a guy named Joseph E. Schmitz. Now, Joseph E. Schmitz is the son of ultra-right-wing Southern California Congressman John G. Schmitz. He is the brother of John P. Schmitz, about whom we will say more in a minute. And he was not only the Inspector General of the Pentagon, but was also, after that, the head of the parent company of Blackwater, or whatever Blackwater became, the artists formerly known as Blackwater. Joseph E. Schmitz, rather, is also a Germanophile and absolutely obsessed with all things German and all things Steuben, bearing in mind that it was the journalistic outlet for the Steuben Society, the Burger Zeitung, that floated the open letter to Stalin, that very important political signal in 1949, and that may very well have been a dominant factor in precipitating the Soviet note of March 10, 1952, bearing in mind the Steuben Society's role as part of the Third Reich Fifth Column and the Underground Reich Fifth Column in this country, the fact that Joseph E. Schmitz was absolutely obsessed, as one Pentagon official put it. He was consumed with all things German and all things von Steuben, unquote, said the defense official, who did not want to become identified because of the ongoing inquiries. This is from a New York, from an LA Times article in 2005. He was obsessed, unquote, talking about Joseph E. Schmitz. Schmitz not only changed the seal of the Inspector General of the Pentagon to the traditional German seal of the von Steuben family, he also was very close to Henning von Steuben, a descendant of Friedrich, Baron Friedrich von Steuben, and the head of the von Steuben Family Association, and his son, Philip J. Schmitz, had a business relationship with the Global Security Network, that is the World Security Network, I should say, that is an international security firm with close ties to the German and right-wing U.S. establishments, the German in particular. Joseph Schmitz's son, Philip J. Schmitz, has a long-standing web contracting relationship with the World Security Network. And that, in turn, is very, very close to the von Steuben interests. I wonder if perhaps Friedrich E. Hoffman, or Albert E. Hoffman, no, it was Friedrich Hoffman, of the Steuben Society in pre-World War II period, was any relation to Hubertus Hoffman. So somebody E. Hoffman, I'll have to double-check the first name, I'm operating from memory. I wonder if he's any relation to Hubertus Hoffman. The point being that the Steuben interests, or what one Pentagon official said, all things von Steuben, is certainly is something that has impressed itself on Joseph E. Schmitz. I suspect that the Joseph E. Schmitz, again, consumed with all things German, is one of the major influences on Donald Trump's foreign policy. Certainly he is one of Trump's top foreign policy advisors. I suspect Trump's pronouncements about Putin, about Ukraine, and about NATO are reflecting the influence of Joseph E. Schmitz. Again, a very interesting individual. He covered up the indications, or many profound indications, of corruption in the Bush Pentagon, including elements that were close to George W. Bush. As we will see in next week's program, we will touch on this at the conclusion of today's program. Joseph E. Schmitz also appears to be quite anti-Semitic. He boasted of having, quote, cleaned out the Jews or gotten rid of the Jews at the Pentagon, and he also has dabbled with Holocaust denial as well. We'll talk about that later. So certainly Joseph E. Schmitz's German obsession and Steuben obsession are not to be seen as a cultural fixation, but rather as indicative of a general quasi-Nazi orientation of Joseph E. Schmitz. Now, his brother, John P. Schmitz, was discussed along with Joseph and the father, John G. Schmitz, in For the Record 476. John P. Schmitz is a very interesting fellow. He not only was the deputy counsel to George Herbert Walker Bush in the White House and the office of the vice president, but he also is an attorney who specializes in high-profile business and regulatory matters and has been very much involved with many of the key German corporations, as we have seen in the book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile by Paul Manning, and as excerpted in For the Record 305, the German core corporations are inextricably linked with the Bormann Capital Network. Reading from the website of Global Partners LLP, or Schmitz Global Partners LLP, John P. Schmitz, we read, he has special emphasis on U.S. and German political regulatory concerns and has experience with numerous high-profile business and regulatory matters involving both American and German public policy and legal activities. John's clients have included Bayer AG, parenthetically part of the old IG Farben cartel, Bertelsmann, parenthetically dominates English language publishing and was the publishing house for the SS in World War II, Bosch GmbH, again another major German firm involved with the automotive trade, and Deutsche Welle, major German television and media outlet with close connections to the BND. Also noting here, John has also held a number of high-profile fellowships. In Germany, under a Robert Bosch Foundation fellowship, he served at the office of Bundestag member Matthias Wismann and the office of General Counsel Robert Bosch GmbH. I would note that the Robert Bosch Foundation fellowship is part of the same foundation fellowship program that ultimately led to the importation of Mohammed Atta into the U.S. Again, the Robert Bosch Foundation fellowship, part of the same fellowship foundation that led to Mohammed Atta being brought into the U.S. There will be a link for that in the written description for the record 919. Notice also that John P. Schmitz worked with Matthias Wismann, a member of the German parliament, the Bundestag. Matthias Wismann became the first German partner with the powerful Washington law firm of Wilmer, Cutler, and Pickering at the same time that Wilmer, Cutler, and Pickering was working on behalf of the defendants, both Swiss and corporate German defendants, in some key Holocaust-related lawsuits. Those lawsuits were involved with the settlement or compensation for victims of the Holocaust who had a great deal of wealth appropriated by the Axis, in this case the Third Reich, and were not ever compensated for that. And again, Matthias Wismann worked for Wilmer, Cutler, and Pickering at that point in time. He also was implicated in the CBU funding scandal as well. The point being that John P. Schmitz, the brother of Joseph Schmitz, is a key lawyer. He worked as the deputy counsel for George H.W. Bush and also works very closely on German and U.S. regulatory matters with powerful American and German corporations. One of the things to note, jumping back again to Germany plots with the Kremlin by T.H. Tettens, is that this courting of Russia and the Soviet Union and threatening to break away from NATO and the U.S. Cued something like a bidding war between the former Soviet Union and the U.S., with the U.S. making ever more concessions to Germany on economic and political matters in order to keep Germany from allying with Russia and pulling away from the U.S. I suspect something very similar will be taking place vis-a-vis Russia and Ukraine and the U.S. Don't be too surprised to see Putin agree to allow Ukraine to draw closer to the EU and perhaps even to allow NATO or German participation with the Ukrainian military in exchange for very close economic and political cooperation between the EU and Germany and Russia and the Eurasian Economic Union. More about that later. At the same time, I would expect the U.S. to make many concessions to Germany, certainly allowing Germany greater control over NATO than they already have. I think shoehorning would be a good word, the pending Atlantic Trade Pact, which would give German corporations even more functional autonomy in the U.S. market than they have now. So keep an eye on what the pro-Adenauer press referred to in Germany Plots with the Kremlin. And again, this is in the early 50s. He, Adenauer, assured his listeners that Russia's conciliatory attitude was most helpful to Germany's aspirations and that other Russian offers were to be expected in which even greater concessions would be made to Germany, especially on the territorial question of the Oder-Neisse line. The Chancellor hinted in his talks that the Soviet note had created the heated atmosphere of an auction room where two eager opponents outbid each other. What I am suggesting is that Donald Trump's bloviations are just exactly this. They create, quote, the heated atmosphere of an auction room where two eager opponents outbid each other. In this case, the U.S. on the one hand, and of course the Soviet Union doesn't exist, but Putin and Russia on the other. It will be interesting to see how Putin slash Russia and the U.S. slash NATO proceed in this bidding dispute, or this auction room, as Adenauer put it, or as the pro-Adenauer press put it.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
Now, let's take a look at what is going on today. Germany is playing something of a good cop, bad cop, although they are going along with NATO policy and although they are going along with the EU/West economic sanctions. The fact of the matter is that German corporations have suffered greatly because of the economic sanctions against Russia, and for that reason, they, as well as other European corporations, including and especially Italian and Austrian corporations, would like to see the sanctions lifted. In turn, there is also some key polling going on in Germany which shows Germans much more favorably disposed to align with Russia than to align with the U.S. And beyond that, German think tanks that are associated with German Ostpolitik and with German corporations are talking about an alliance between the EU and the Russian-dominated Eurasian Economic Union. And the upshot of that would be basically an economic entity stretching from Lisbon to Vladivostok. It will be interesting to see if, again, what I suspect with Donald Trump is that his pronouncements about Russia, Ukraine, and NATO are very similar to the open letter to Stalin, basically. And in return, the Soviet note of March 10th, 1952. I think they are intended to start a bidding war between Russia and the West. And again, I believe that Trump is not a Russian dupe or agent at all. But as we look at his historical development and associations, they go to the underground Reich, to the Third Reich, to extreme right-wing elements, and to corporate Germany. More about that later. Reading from GermanForeignPolicy.com of May 3rd of 2016, German business circles and proxy foreign policy organizations are campaigning to have the sanctions against Russia lifted. More than two-thirds of the people in Germany are in favor of lifting sanctions, reports the Körber Foundation of Hamburg, based on the current opinion poll. More than four-fifths want close cooperation with Russia, and 95% consider a rapprochement in the next few years to be either important, unquote, or very important, unquote. The Körber Foundation, an influential organization in the field of foreign policy, has for years engaged in developing cooperation between Germany and Russia. The hope of an early lifting of sanctions was also the subject of the 4th East German East Forum Berlin, an economic forum with the top-ranked participants held in mid-April, at which a state secretary of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs spoke in favor of new contacts between the EU and the Moscow-initiated Eurasian Economic Union. The objective is the creation of a common, quote, economic space from Lisbon to Vladivostok, unquote. The initiatives taken in Germany are being met with approval in several EU countries, including Italy and Austria. Again, reading this last sentence. The objective is the creation of a common, quote, economic space from Lisbon to Vladivostok, unquote. The initiatives taken in Germany are being met with approval in several EU countries, including Italy and Austria. Demands to abandon the sanctions policy against Moscow have been growing louder in various EU member countries, such as Italy, for which Russia is one of its most important business partners. In mid-March, the foreign ministers of Italy and Hungary had opposed an automatic prolongation of the sanctions without a debate. Following talks in Moscow in early April, the president of Austria, Heinz Fischer, announced he was also working toward halting the punitive measures. Last week, France's National Assembly passed a plea to end the sanctions. Anger is also apparent in Greece. Moreover, resistance is growing within German business circles who, if the sanctions are lifted soon, hope for a new start of their business with Eastern Europe. Exports to Russia have plummeted from an annual volume of 39 billion euros to less than 22 billion. If sanctions are lifted, German companies are counting on being able to redeem at least part of these losses. Similar views were recently expressed at the East Forum Berlin, convened by the German Committee on Eastern European Economic Relations, or OEA, together with the Metro Group and Italy's UniCredit for the fourth time in the German capital of Berlin. More than 400 participants, including the recently fired Ukrainian Minister of Finances, Natalie Jaresko, and Russia's first Deputy Minister of Economic Development, Alexei Likachev, discussed the development of, quote, an economic space extending from Lisbon to Vladivostok. In a survey of 180 participants of this top-ranked forum, more than 80% clearly favored negotiations between the EU and the Moscow-led Eurasian Economic Union on the establishment of a common, quote, economic space, unquote. They found many sympathetic listeners. In his East Forum opening speech, State Secretary of Germany's Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Stephen Steinlein, S-T-E-I-N-L-E-I-N, confirmed that the German government supports, quote, contacts between the EU and the Eurasian Economic Union, unquote. Again, quoting, technical standards, trade rules, cross-border infrastructure, and simplified exchange procedures should be discussed. Sanctions against Russia was another important issue discussed at the East Forum. 35% of those surveyed predicted an end to the sanctions in the course of this year, while 27% predicted 2017. Only slightly more than a third thought the sanctions would last longer than 2017. Last week, Hamburg's Körber Foundation, one of Germany's foreign policy organizations which promoted closer cooperation between Germany and Russia for years, took a stand. Dialogue and understanding between the two countries have for decades been an important element of our work, unquote, declared the foundation. And skipping down to underline its quest, the Körber Foundation has just recently published the results of a representative survey conducted on its behalf in both Germany and Russia by TNS in protest in late February and early March. The survey shows that only 2 years after escalation of the Ukrainian conflict, a significant estrangement between the populations of the U.S. and Germany can be noticed. 48% of the Germans perceive Russia as a, quote, threat, unquote. Only 50% believe emphatically that Russia belongs to Europe, unquote. More than half of the German population considers the EU's policy toward Russia as appropriate, unquote. However, when asked which country Germany should work more closely with, 81% of those Germans participating in the survey opted for Russia, in second place behind France, 89%, and far ahead of the USA, 59%. In Russia, 62% of the respondents chose Germany as their favorite cooperation partner ahead of China and France. 69% of the Germans favor lifting the sanctions on Russia. And lastly, 95% believe that it is important or very important that Germany and Russia develop closer relations over the next few years. And note that a major part of the long-term geopolitical goals of Ostpolitik articulated by Adenauer and the pro-Adenauer press in Germany in the early 1950s and advocated by the Underground Reich and the Steuben Society, as we saw, that is, the creation of a German-dominated all-European army. Jumping to the present, from, again, GermanForeignPolicy.com, that feeds along the lower right-hand part of the front page, this from June 28th of 2016, the European War Union, this reads in part, together with his French counterpart, the German foreign minister has announced the EU's transformation to become a political union and its resolute militarization for global military operations, unquote. In a joint position paper, Frank-Walter Steinmeier and Jean-Marc Ayrault, A-Y-R-A-U-L-T, are calling for the EU's comprehensive military buildup based on a division of labor to enable future global military operations. Following the Brexit, the EU should step by step become an independent and global actor, both independent and global in quotes. That, of course, is one of the long-term articulated goals of German Ostpolitik as formulated by Adenauer and his press. Continuing, all forces must be mobilized and all of the EU's political instruments must be consolidated into an integrated EU foreign and military policy. Steinmeier and Ayrault are therefore pushing for a European security compact which calls for maintaining employable high-readiness forces and establishing standing maritime forces as well. The European Council should meet once a year as the European Security Council. Before this paper was made public, Germany's foreign minister and chancellor had made comments also promoting a German global policy and a massive rearmament, possibly also with EU support. And in the last section of that, and that entire article, as well as the entire article that we just read about lifting sanctions on Russia, are in the written description for the record 919. And in the arms section, Steinmeier and Ayrault write in detail that, quote, to plan and conduct civil and military operations more effectively, the EU should institute a permanent civil-military chain of command, unquote. In addition, it must be able, quote, to rely on employable high-readiness forces in order to live up to the growing security challenges that Europeans need, quote, to step up their defense efforts. Skipping down. Just a few days ago, Foreign Minister Steinmeier declared in the U.S. Journal Foreign Affairs that Germany had become a major power, unquote, and will, quote, try its best, unquote, on the world stage to hold as much ground as possible. I will also note in that regard other EU-wide security organizations are being proposed, again from GermanForeignPolicy.com, June 27th of 2016, Flexible Union with the European FBI. Again, they're proposing a European FBI. And in our discussions of Eddie the Friendly Spook, specifically in For the Record 765, we spoke about the proposal by Catherine Ashton to form an EU-wide equivalent of the National Security Agency, and again, all of the three GermanForeignPolicy.com articles are in the description for the record, program number 919. Now back to Donald Trump. Again, we've seen that his pronouncements, although appearing to the Dubkov Americans as, you know, he must be a Kremlin/Russian/Putin dupe, actually are consistent not only with German Ostpolitik as articulated in the early 1950s, but also consistent with initiatives that are underway in the EU at the present time. Both attempts at lifting sanctions on Russia and forging an economic union running from Lisbon to Vladivostok, and also the formation of an EU-wide army and political command, and also a European-wide FBI and an EU. We took a look at Joseph Schmitz, his obsession with all things German, his obsession with all things Steuben, his relationships to the Steuben milieu in Germany and the U.S., and his brother's profound relationships with corporate Germany. With Donald Trump's real estate deals, they have been more than a little opaque. We know that in For the Record 902, his links to organized crime, there is more to it than that. An only partially successful New York Times investigation of Donald Trump's opaque military, real estate deals was carried in the Times of August 21st of 2016, this by Suzanne Craig, Trump's Empire, A Maze of Debts and Opaque Ties, and talking about how mysterious Donald Trump's businesses, real estate businesses are. And they were only able to successfully investigate some of this. In the typically complex deal, loan documents show that four lenders, German American Capital, a subsidiary of Deutsche Bank, UBS Real Estate Securities, Goldman Sachs Mortgage Company, and the Bank of China, agreed in November of 2012 to lend $950 million to the three companies that own the building. Note there again that Deutsche Bank and the Union Bank of Switzerland are major Bormann-connected banks, and high-end real estate is a common money-laundering vehicle for various interests, and complex, altogether opaque business relationships are one of the characteristics of the Bormann network. And skipping down. The majority owner of 40 Wall Street Holdings Corporation owns 80% of the land. New Scandic SCA and DIC Wall Limited Partnership owns the rest, according to public documents. New Scandic Wall Limited Partnership's chief executive is Joachim Ferdinand von Grumer Douglas, a businessman based in Europe, according to these documents. The people behind 40 Wall Street Holdings are even harder to identify. For years, Germany's powerful Hindenburg family, which made its fortune in the shipping industry, controlled the property through a company called 40 Wall Limited Partnership. In late 2014, their interest in the land was transferred to a new company, 40 Wall Street Holdings. The Times was not able to identify the owner or owners of this company, and the Trump Organization declined to comment. The Hindenburg family, most people have never heard of. It is one of the most powerful shipping firms in the world, specializes in container shipping, and again, with powerful yet not very well-known German firms like this, and with interests like the Wall Street Holdings Corporation, and New Scandic Wall Limited Partnership's chief executive being Joachim Ferdinand von Grumer Douglas, with powerful subsidiaries of Deutsche Bank and the Union Bank of Switzerland being deeply involved, with the complex real estate dealings of Donald Trump, so complex the Times could not successfully unravel them. This is characteristic of the Bormann Capital Network, and there will be some links in the description for the program. Next week, we're going to develop Trump's connections still further, talking not so much about his benign rhetoric toward Russia, Ukraine, etc., and harsh rhetoric toward NATO, but rather all of his Nazi, anti-Semitic, and white supremacists / Third Reich / Underground Reich links. Like the aforementioned Joseph E. Schmitz, we're going to access an article from the McClatchy News Bureau of August 18th. Trump advisor accused of making anti-Semitic remarks by Marissa Taylor and William Douglas, in which Joseph Schmitz not only allegedly boasted of having cleaned the Jews out of the Defense Department contracts, but also said that the ovens at Auschwitz were too small and that therefore the Holocaust was exaggerated or didn't take place at all. That, however, next week. This concludes For the Record 919, The Trip and Come for Banda Part 2, German Ostpolitik Part 2. This is being recorded on August 25th, 2016. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.